When you think about most of your losses and frustrations from the past year, almost all of your frustrations end up coming back to people issues. So I'll give you an example. As a basketball coach, I would have a player that turns the ball over, and I would get mad at Dan. He's the one that turned it over. I'm mad at Dan. So the way I'm going to fix me being mad at Dan is we're going to do 10 more minutes of ball handling the next day, or we're going to put in a new press break. But Dan is still the same. Dan might be a great ball handler. We try to fix Dan with a sport-specific skill. The problem is Dan might have poise issues, he might have focus issues, he might have parent issues, he might have girlfriend issues, he might not trust his teammates, he might not trust me. Almost every one of our frustrations comes back to a people issue. A people issue, not a sport issue.
So you were just listening to Jamie Beckler, who's our guest in the podcast today. And he was talking about how as coaches, we often ignore a culture problem and we try to fix it with a tactical or technical intervention. Now, I'm probably as guilty as any coach out there for this type of approach over the years. And awareness of my problematic approach as a leader was just really the first step. I needed some interventions for my culture. Now, in today's episode, Jamie is going to share some of his unique experiences as a championship athletic director, college basketball coach, and executive business trainer. He's going to share some of his interventions that are going to help us to take ourselves and our team's results and leadership to the next level. You're listening to episode 125, Your Culture Problems Aren't Always Your Fault, But They Are Your Responsibility, with our guest, Jamie Beckler. Now, before we jump into our conversation with Jamie, I want to tell you a little bit about an experience like nothing else that I know out there for coaches. Nate and I realized a few years back that coaches didn't need more of a traditional coaching clinics that just dissipated more information. See, we live in an information age with books, podcasts, articles, right? People need personalized support and solutions, which is a big reason why our mentorship program has grown so much, in my opinion. Well, in working with so many coaches over the last 3 years, I saw many coaches with not only a similar vision, but similar challenges. And bringing these people together, we knew would be an incredible experience. Now, last year, 13 of us got together in a home high in the mountains of Park City, Utah, beautiful up there. And the value of that weekend went well beyond the content that we shared with those leaders. But the connections and friendships that were made were incredible. Probably the thing that actually surprised me the most was how much stinking fun we all had and how much we laughed. Well, we're going to be running more retreats this year. And currently we have May 1st through 4th in the books and August 3rd through 6th. We have college and high school male and female coaches and athletic directors attending this year. All sports, all levels are welcome. However, spots are limited to 12 coaches per retreat. The cost starts at $785, and that includes transportation to the house, food, and accommodation. So you're not stressing about hotels, eating out, or getting to the event. Another thing is that many of the leaders, athletic departments or school administration actually paid for part of or all of their retreat. We really want it to be a relaxing, affordable, and transformational experience. So we're ready to work with your athletic department or school admin to do whatever we can on our part. Now, if you're interested, you need to do three simple things, right? First, go to thriveonchallenge.com/retreats and apply there. I'll put a link in the episode details as well. Secondly, Nate or I will reach out to you within about 24 hours to connect with you. And after that, if you're in, all you got to do is put down a small $100 deposit. Now, don't miss out on this experience. go to thriveonchallenge.com/retreats. Well, Jamie, it's great to have you on the podcast today. We're going to dive into a lot of topics here, but one of the first things that I know that we share as far as when it comes to our beliefs about the sporting culture and coaches today is that coaches are far too focused on the X's and O's of the game, and they're neglecting what really matters, which is people. And can you talk a little bit about that and how you see that manifested in coaches and within our sporting culture today?
Absolutely, JP. And you know, I know that you do so much work with culture and transformational leadership. And you know, I think more coaches need to listen to that, kind of take hold of that, because there's way too much transactional stuff going on, or way too much, you know, short-term type, hey, let's get these X's and O's, let's go to these clinics, let's get this new zone offense. And those are great things, obviously. You know, we want to have the best offense, we want to be competent. But the problem is most of the time, you know, and you guys know this having been coaches, if something doesn't work in a game, we probably do one of two things the next day. We either spend more time working on it the next day, or we put in a new wrinkle to that play. You know, the offense didn't work, so we're going to do a different screening action or do something a little bit different. But the problem is, we might have players, we might have Jalen and Chris on our team, and they just don't get along. They just don't trust each other. Or maybe Jalen and Chris like each other, but they don't trust me as a coach. And so what happens is we try to treat that symptom sometimes, but the problem is we have this illness going on our team. And as coaches, and I was the same way, especially early on, it's all about the plays. Man, I'm running, you know, Pat Summitt's stuff. I'm running Tom Izzo stuff, Coach K's stuff. But these kids, these darn kids aren't getting it. You know, it's, I can't believe, you know, they're idiots. They're idiots. Every year they're idiots. They can't get it. And then after a while, I'm like, you know what? It's been like 4 years into this, and I'm the one that's the same every year. You know, kids come and go, but I'm the common denominator here. Maybe I'm the idiot. Maybe I'm the one that's not getting it. And so, you know, my first 4 years of coaching, you know, I cared about the kids, but I was too concerned about X's and O's. I was too concerned about making sure I had the right offense, the right defense, instead of worrying about those relationships, those connections. And what would happen is, you know, hey, kids won't run through a wall for you. Kids won't do this. Kids these days, you know, how many times did that come out of my mouth? And all of a sudden, I'm realizing, you know what? They will do that stuff if they know, like, and trust me. And right now, they don't know, like, and trust me. Or they don't know, like, and trust their teammates. And so after that first 4 years of coaching, I really started to focus on the soft skills, so to speak, which, you know, I don't have a really better word for that. But the leadership, the character stuff, the soft skills that you don't learn at clinics as much, because that's the stuff that really makes or breaks your culture. That's the thing that really transforms your team. That's the thing that's lasting. And when adversity strikes, when the plays aren't working, when the defense has scouted you really well, that's the stuff that allows your players to still be able to have success when the play actually breaks down. And so, you know, I started to go back to the drawing board and I said, hey, we got to work on this leadership stuff. We got to be more transformational. We got to invest more in our kids as opposed to investing in these plays.
You know, Jamie, one of the things we talk about a lot with that transformational approach is that it really has to start with us as a coach before we can expect our players to, you know, embrace that process and embrace that type of culture. And I love that phrasing that you use there of, you know, players have to know, like, and trust me. You know, and if a coach is in a place where that's where they really need to have and experience the most growth, I mean, what would be some things that you would recommend for a coach to begin with to build into that, allowing players to know them, like them, and trust them?
Well, you hit upon it, Nate, to start with. We have to decide that we want to do that. And that's one of the biggest things. And we'll tell our kids all the time, hey, knowing what you're supposed to do is easy. Doing it's the hard part. You all know what you're supposed to do. Well, as coaches, we should know what we're supposed to do. We just don't always do it. Just like I know how to love and treat my wife, but I don't always do it. But then I try to bring candies or balloons or flowers or a card to take a shortcut, you know, instead of picking up my socks, treating her well, all that kind of stuff. As coaches, we try to take these shortcuts. We try to do these gimmicks or put in a new play or whatever without actually investing. And so, because it's hard. And so the very first thing is we got to decide, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what I know I need to do, and I'm going to commit to doing it. And so many coaches aren't coachable. So many coaches aren't willing to improve, aren't willing to grow, aren't willing to look at their own, you know, why is it not working? Well, it's the kid's fault, or, you know, the referees, or we're always looking outside of ourselves, but we don't accept that from our kids, but we do that. So we have to be willing to be coachable. We have to be willing to look at what's working, what's not working, and look at ourselves as the problem. And we may not be always the problem. It may not always be our fault, but it is 100% our responsibility to make things as good as they can be. And a lot of times, you know, after a game, we'll be like, well, you know, in our minds, well, if those kids had blocked out, if our kids had had effort, you know, if those kids this, yeah, well, that might not be our fault, but it is our responsibility to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And so how do we do that? Well, it goes back to we're selling something. You know, every coach, every leader listening to this podcast right now is a salesman. You're not selling cars necessarily. You're not selling refrigerators. You're selling your beliefs. You're selling your system. You're selling your culture, your philosophy to teenagers, essentially. And so how are you going to do that? Well, they got to buy it. They got to buy what you're selling. They got to know, like, and trust that. And so the very first step is they've got to want, as a coach, you've got to want to make this transformational change. You know, nobody, you know, it's like, you know, New Year's resolutions or whatever. You can't make somebody change their life unless they want to change. And so as a coach, you have to want to change. And then secondly, you got to live it out. You got to live it out. What's going to be important? You know, you decide as a coach, all right, rebounding is going to be really important. All right. So you're going to focus on that. But, you know, the same on the flip side, how many coaches out there, you know, they don't really emphasize rebounding. And then all of a sudden they give up 25 offensive rebounds in a game and they're going ballistic and telling their kids they have no effort. Well, you did one drill the last week in practice. You know, you really didn't focus on that. And so once you decide that you want to be this transformational coach and really start diving in to your kids' lives, connecting with them, then you have to live that out daily.
One of the things that we had kind of discussed as we were preparing for this podcast that you said that really stuck with me is that fires are going to break out in the locker room, the back of the bus, the cafeteria, and yet too few coaches are preparing for this inevitability, even in the good programs. And that really stuck with me because I think a lot of coaches that maybe are even listening to this podcast that are investing in themselves and investing in their team culture, they think that because they're putting those investments that fires won't break out. When fires do come, then they're like, well, but I did the leadership meeting with my team. I did do that. I did have my one-on-ones and I have been trying these strategies. What kind of advice do you give for those coaches to prepare for this inevitability that it's going to come, which is these fires and these conflicts?
Well, once again, they have to intentionally say to themselves, all right, I am going to do this. I am going to help equip and develop our players and empower them and help them be ready for when these things come. Most of us as coaches don't intentionally take that approach. We say, yeah, we might handle that when it happens, but we don't really. We're not proactive about it. But yeah, you're right, JP. There's going to be fires that break out, you know, metaphorically speaking. There's going to be drama. There's going to be issues, even on the best teams out there. Nobody's immune from that. It just might be on a different continuum. It might be a different extreme. You know, the worst teams tend to have worse drama and the best teams tend to have less drama, but they're still going to have drama. And so, you know, yeah, are you equipping your players with fire? With fire extinguishers to put that stuff out, or lighter fluid and make it worse. And so many players that I coached and that I work with now, so many of them will say a variation of, well, I didn't talk bad, or I didn't say anything. I didn't make it worse, but they didn't make it better. And so what happens is in life, we're trying to move forward. We're trying to progress. We're trying to make things better. And if you're not making things better, then you're not making things better, which is like the most obvious statement you could say. But, you know, so many times these kids are thinking, well, I didn't make it worse. Okay, but you didn't make it better. Therefore, eventually it will get worse because you can't stay the same. And so you try to equip them with that fire extinguisher so they can put things out. And you know, one of those things is think about, as a coach right now, as a coach, you're listening to this podcast and you could easily list 5 to 10 things that will happen in your next season, 5 to 10 things that you're going to have to deal with. Now, the extreme of it might be minimal or it might be really extreme, but there's going to be 5 to 10 to 15 things you can think of right off the bat that you're going to have to deal with. Okay, we'll be proactive about that. Start talking about those things now. Start giving your players some ideas of how they can handle that. And you know, one of those things was I decided a few years ago, hey, I want to write a book about this. And so I wrote this book, The Bus Trip. And certainly it's not a perfect book. And certainly it's more of an ideal type book than it is, all right, you know, the idea that, all right, one bus trip, people can change the way they think. You know, that might not be the case, but through the course of the year, if your players can start thinking gradually about different issues, and that's what we wanted to come up with the bus trip, was, all right, these are 5 to 10 things that players will deal with or coaches will deal with through the year. And so how would I want my players to deal with that? How would I want my players to hold each other accountable? How would I want them to conversate in the cafeteria, in the back of the bus, in the locker room? Because that's really where your true culture is happening. You know, when in those 2 hours of basketball practice, you control that. When they go away, they're going to be gone away from you for more than 2 hours in a day. You know, they got 22 more hours to be away from you. That's when they can talk bad about you. That's when they can talk bad about teammates. That's when they can totally undo the 2 hours that you just had. And you know, you go into businesses. So many businesses are undone around a water cooler or break time in the break room or when they go to lunch together by the things, the negativity that goes on. Conversely, the positivity can reinforce what you're saying. And so, you know, we wanted to give players an idea of this is how you could address this if a player, your peer, is going through this. And these are some conversations that you could have. And so those are the kinds of things as coaches, you know, 5 to 10 things that are going to happen this year. Be proactive. Help train your players to know how to deal with those when they happen.
You know, Jamie, sometimes on our podcast here, it's our own personal counseling sessions where we share our failures and all of our mistakes. And I think one of the things that I've done a poor job over the years of is preparing teams for the inevitability of adversity. You know, and as you said, we know that there are things we're going to run into. And sometimes you can anticipate those as a coach. You have an idea of what your chemistry might be like or how the personality of your team may change with graduation and players coming in and out. But I think there's also something to be said for trying to build an approach to a season or to a team's experience where we know we're going to be challenged in some way. We know we're going to struggle. We know that, you know, there's going to be nights where we can't shoot it as well as we know we can, or you know, we're going to get upset or whatever it might be. And trying to build an approach to that says somehow we're going to come out of that experience stronger and better. You know, it's going to build into our character, not only for this year, but our character for what happens to us long after our sport or our career is over. And I think that a lot of coaches philosophically would buy into that's part of our purpose as educators, as coaches, is to help build that character into our players. I think the walking that out is I've found to be much more difficult, is trying to get players to be in a place where they embrace adversity rather than allowing it to splinter a team or create division or whatever. And I don't know if you have, you know, anything to speak to that idea of just preparing a team for, you know, again, the inevitability. And I know it's kind of repeating what we've said a little bit here, but just the idea that it can make us stronger and that there's benefit in going through difficult situations together.
Well, as you were talking, Nate, I thought of a couple things, but you know, I've been to so many high school practices or even college practices for that matter, but so many practices where kids are allowed to do things that they would never be allowed to do in games. And then I've talked to coaches and they'll complain about the players doing these things in games, and yet they allowed it or they didn't emphasize it during practice. And kids are going to do whatever they're allowed to do, essentially. And so some things like that, and that ties into the adversity thing with whatever you're doing and emphasizing in practice is going to eventually seep into their mindset. It's going to be a mentality. And so if you're stopping the play in practice every time that there's a foul, well, then that doesn't prepare them for a game when they're going to complain about fouls. And I know we could, you know, probably debate this back and forth about how you structure your practice, all that kind of stuff. But I think none of us would debate the fact that kids like to complain about fouls or not fouls being called in a game. we like to complain about referees. We know that that's going to be adversity. Referees will be a major adversity for us in almost every sport. So how are we preparing them for that adversity in practice? And if we're blowing the whistle every time that there's a little ticky-tack foul or every time that our star gets hit, that's not teaching them much. Now, the same way, you don't want it to turn into, you know, barnyard basketball where people are just getting knocked down and there's concussions at every practice. You know, you don't want to go crazy to the other extreme also. But if you want to prepare them for a game where there's going to be poor calls or no calls, or they're going to complain about calls, then you need to start doing that in practice to some degree. Figure out how you can implement that. You know, other things from the start of the year, put adversity in their way so that you can talk about it. It doesn't have to be crazy adversity, but, you know, turn that temperature up to 90 degrees or make it 60 degrees or whatever in the gym. Change the degrees. And certainly, you know, if you're going to play a team where the gym is always cold, you know, practice in some cold weather gym before you play that. Or, hey, I would give them bad basketballs sometimes, you know, and I would just throw out some bad basketballs. We're going to scrimmage with this ball. And I wanted to see how they were going to react to it. And I knew exactly how they were going to react. They were going to complain about it. Well, then we talk about that. We work on that. And then what happens is eventually you do this for a couple months where you're instituting some different adversity. Eventually, when adversity strikes, they're going to be able to either one, handle it better to start with, or two, be able to bounce back quicker from that adversity. You know, get some pool noodles, dollar pool noodles at Dollar General or Dollar Tree. You know, wave that in their face. Not that it affects the shooting of their free throw, but wave that in their face like it's Cameron Indoor Stadium or something. Or you know, you'll probably never face that, but get them dealing with adversity so that it's in their mindset that they can handle anything that comes their way, and they're able to bounce back and rebound and just handle things that come that's unexpected in life. And they start to understand to control what they can control and to have that attitude that we can still make the best of whatever situation we're in.
No, I think that's fantastic, because I think so often our trap is in this transformational coaching can be that we try to create experiences for our players that always just feel really good. You know, we really want it to be a positive environment. And, you know, I've always been a big encourager of just like a hell day or hell week, like something like that, just putting them through like something really physically challenging, because I think we've got to be able to, before you really get into it, you've got to put them in a little bit of more controlled environment, put them through that type of adversity like you're talking about, where you just really put them up against the ropes and you help them kind of work through that, or they help each other work through those situations. So I think that's really, really important, because I think so often we fall too much to the, let's just create a lot of things that feel good instead of things that are just really, really, really stinking hard.
Well, you're right, JP, but I also think that you can take those adversity or take those struggles and turn it into that feel good experience. You know, just, you know, I don't want to create adversity and create challenges and struggles for my players so that they feel bad. I want to create these things so they ultimately feel good about themselves, so that those are things that they overcome. So you can actually take both approaches and combine it. Now, once again, that takes more intentionality on your part as a coach. It takes a better strategy. You have to have a game plan. You know, don't just do something crazy just to do it with no end in mind. Your end is to make them better, but not from the old school tough love. I'm going to tear you down. You know, if you're going to tear them down, then you better have a really good plan to build them up real quick. And, you know, we always want to have this tough love, but we forget that if you're going to have tough love, you better have a real strong bond with them. You know, that's why the Greg Popovich is, you know, he's one example, but that's why he can dog cuss Tim Duncan, and yet Tim Duncan will still run through a wall for him, because they have that strong bond, so that when the tough love occurs, you know, they can weather that storm together. But, you know, the adversity, have those struggles, have those challenges, but with the idea that, you know what, they're going to come out better on the back end, that they're going to end up feeling good because they overcame that. One thing, and this would be something that you would only do if you really trusted a certain player that you had on your team, but you could have a player on your team kind of in on it, from the beginning. You don't want to do this too often, and you want to make sure you pick the right player, but maybe you go off on that player and they know it ahead of time. Or maybe, hey, we're going to do this struggle, that we're going to do this challenge today. And Chris, what I want you to do, I want you to know that this is coming, but you're going to be able to step up as a leader today and help take your team through this struggle. And so what happens is that player gets a little bit more, they trust you, but the players start to trust that player. But also you have someone that's able to navigate them through that challenge. They might not know exactly how to navigate, but they're going to be able to encourage their teammates. They're going to be able to say, hey, let's stick together. So sometimes you could do that just so that, you know, you don't want to do that too often. You never want to go to the well too much with your strategies like that. But that's something too, especially early on in the season. Early on in the season, if the players aren't used to going through struggles, maybe have somebody, you know, on the inside that knows that that's going on, knows what your motives are, and they're going to help bring that team together through it.
I actually did that one year, Jamie. A number of years ago, I had a captain whose name was Bailey, and her nickname was B. And so, you know, there was just a little bit of internal struggle with taking coaching, you know, and stuff like that. And she was our best player. And so I had a conversation with her, you know, and I just said, hey, if I'm yelling at you, you know, be this or be that, whatever, if I'm using your nickname, then I'm really trying to get after the team. But I'm really, you know, it isn't necessarily for you to take personally. But if I say, Bailey, you need to block out, then I'm really talking to you. And so over the next, you know, week or two, again, we're not just ragging on her the whole time. But that was one way that she could kind of deflect a little bit and also just be able to demonstrate taking coaching with good eye contact and nodding and, you know, trying to model that a little bit without her, you know, again, taking it as degradation, you know, and it was a little, and it helped us, to be honest with you, because we just needed somebody, again, when your best player and your captain and your senior is willing to take it. And Popovich talks about this all the time with Duncan, you know, when he's coached like anybody else, like the 15th guy on the roster, it's pretty hard for everyone else to complain when he's getting after him. So I've seen that work in my own experience in the past.
Now, Jamie, you've actually written a book recently called The Bus Trip, and that is for, can be used as kind of a fire extinguisher potentially for certain teams, whether the culture is healthy or weak. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book, The Bus Trip, and why you wrote it?
Yeah, it's certainly designed for players. It takes a little over 2 hours probably to read, and it follows a team that's struggling. It's been a challenging season for this team, and they go on this bus ride, and a number of situations and conversations occur and come up that end up changing mindsets of players. And essentially, one of the ways that I think about it is, it's not this. There's a team meeting at the end of the book or at the end of a trip, but it's not something where there was this rah-rah moment where there was this team meeting and everybody got on board. It was all these little situations, these little things, these one-on-one conversations that ended up leading to a team meeting, not the other way around. And when I teach leadership, I teach it that it's all about the one-on-ones, the little connections, these everybody doing the little things that adds up to the big things. It's not the Tim Tebow, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, you know, rah-rah moments where, you know, they move mountains. That rarely happens, and we rarely have those kind of leaders. What most of the time happens is there's two or three people talking, and it's either negative or positive, or you're talking with your parents on the way home from a game. And that can be positive or negative. And that goes a lot further than that one big team meeting or whatever the coach will say. So we have, there's a number of situations where players will talk. And every time in these situations, those players are either roommates or they're good friends. So I don't believe that true influence can happen if you're not really close to somebody. Just because you're a teammate doesn't mean you're going to be real close to them. Sometimes I think we have teammates that spin their wheels by trying to get another teammate to do something, but they don't have that relationship. Just like a coach with a player, if you don't have a good relationship, that player is not going to listen to you. The same way with teammates. And so if you're a roommate, if you're a good friend with somebody, then you can more closely hold them accountable, have tougher conversations, and be vulnerable with each other. And that's kind of what the book is about. And, you know, at the end, we give 10 things that all players can do, and regardless of their status or situation or role on the team. And so our hope is that a player would read this and begin to think and change their mindset and say, these are some things that I could do. Okay, this is thoughts I've had before, or I've had conversations like this, but it didn't quite go this way. Maybe I could change up what I said. And so we use a lot of stories from real life. We intertwine those into the book as well. So
yeah, but that's one of my favorite things about the book is the conversations that you show these players are having and the coaches are having within the team, because I think that's where we really see a transformation in our culture. It's less about the team meetings. It's more about the conversations that we're having day in and day out that happen over a period of time. Those conversations help to change players and coaches' thinking. And, you know, too often we try to change behaviors without changing the thinking. And we, before we can make those change in our behaviors and the way that we do things day in and day out, we've got to change our thinking first. And this book is a great resource for that.
Yeah, and you're not going to change anybody's thoughts by berating them or if they don't respect you. And so that's one of the things we want to do is make sure that all these conversations were happening between people that respected each other, liked each other. You know, it's the same way coach to player. It's the same way, you know, a husband to wife or any interaction that you're going to have. If there's not that respect, then you're going to have a hard time moving somebody to change or to see your perspective maybe. And so, yeah. And obviously, you know, it's an ideal situation. You know, this isn't going to happen in one bus ride. But you know, it's also not, you know, a 9,000 page book. We're not going to go through the course of the year. So we wanted to put as much as we could into one bus ride.
Jamie, as we wrap up here this week, where can coaches follow you? I know you're active on Twitter and, have your own podcast. Where's the best place to find you for coaches that want to keep up with you after listening to this?
Yeah, they can. Probably the easiest place is my website is coachbeckler.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Coach Beckler. And they can find my books and links to the books and links to podcasts there as well. And yeah, the Success is a Choice podcast. We have that. We interview people from all kinds of walks of life, sports, entertainment, business. And, yeah, they can find all my books at the website or at Twitter at Coach Beckler.
Yeah, we're going to put those links in the episode details. We'll put them in our weekly newsletter and also our podcast notes. You can get the weekly newsletter and podcast notes every week by going to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribing there. Be sure to do that. Also, go to thriveonchallenge.com/retreats. You coaches, you really don't want to miss out on this experience. We had a group last year. Many of them took a leap of faith. They weren't really sure what they were getting into. Every one of them loved the experience and said they are looking forward to coming back.